Dhimiranjasatinanjana salakaya Chakshuram maritanjana tasma shiravenamaha Shri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam jinnabhutale Svamrupakiramayam dadati svabhudandikam Avandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapad Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Shakvijatam Chaganaratam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parishana Chaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganarita Shri Rishikam Vitam Cha Hare Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Indra Vandhu Gapate Gopisha Gopikatam Tadharakam Pramostute Tathikam Chanyamorangi Dhali Vinda Nishwari Abrishwana Sistadevi Nanamani Hiripri Avanchika Patrugascha Kripasandu Vyacha Haritanam Bhavaniyo Vaishnavi Omaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhavanachananda Shri Advaitakadha Sarasari Gopakvinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Citizens.
Dharma
for the right cause.
Yudhe
in the fight.
Vadaha
killing.
Dvisham
of the enemies.
Iti
all these.
Me
for me.
Na
never.
Tu
but.
Odaya
for satisfaction.
Kalpate,
they are meant for administration.
Sasanam,
injunction.
Vachaha,
words of.
Translation.
There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens. But this injunction is not applicable to me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira thought that although he was not actually involved in the administration of the kingdom, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens, he caused the killing of so many living beings only for his personal gain of the kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana. The killing was committed not in the course of administration, but for the sake of self-aggrandizement, and as such, he thought himself responsible for all the sins. There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens, but this injunction is not applicable to me. So this conversation is taking place actually after the funeral ceremonies, after the battle of Kurukshetra. The sequence of events in these chapters is not in a chronological order, so it appears that this conversation is taking place, in one sense, after the prayers of Queen Kunti. Actually, this conversation took place many months previous to that, you know, after the funeral ceremonies, pretty much straight after the Battle of Kurukshetra. you know, therefore, after this conversation, Krishna wanted Yudhisthira to be consoled by the words of Bhishma, which took place over the course of a couple of months, and then of course then there were the prayers of Queen Kunti at the very end. so Yudhisthira Maharaj is feeling very much aggrieved. That's mentioned in verse number 48, his lamentation begins. I am a sinful man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance, this body, which is ultimate meant for others, has killed many, many phalanxes of men. So, you know, there, Yudhisthira Maharaj is feeling that he is, you know, he is very, very much aggrieved that on account of him, millions and millions of you know, men have been killed. So you know, there are different numbers put forward. Sometimes you get 640 million. Sometimes we say, I think in the Bhagavatam there's a figure of 640 million. I think in the Mahabharata it's 6,400,000, something like that. I once, you know, added up the, you know, if you add up the phalanxes, I think it works out about 6,400,000. Anyway, there are different. I know that there are a couple of figures, and I think there's about three different figures I've seen. We can just generally say that millions and millions were killed. I know at one stage Srila Prabhupada pointed out that one of the figures that was quoted somewhere was not correct. But millions and millions of soldiers, of men, were actually killed. So, you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj was feeling very, very much personally responsible, very, very sinful. And actually the day after Yudhisthira's coronation, which took place, you know, shortly after the Battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira went to see Krishna, and he, you know, Yudhisthira was also thinking of Bhishma, who was lying on the bed of arrows in the battlefield, and you know, so many people that he felt personally responsible that he'd cause their suffering. He saw Krishna there sitting, I think Krishna was sitting on his bed, and he said, you know, Krishna, what will I do now? And Krishna was actually just fixed in meditation, and there was no reply. So again, Yudhisthira asked him, and then, Krishna turned, and Yudhisthira said, do you mind if you think I'm capable of understanding? Can you tell me what your mind is fixed upon? And Krishna said, my mind, Bhishma is actually about to leave his body. And at this very time, his only thought is thinking of me. And as he is thinking of me, I am also only thinking of him. So, this was Krishna's mood, that he was, very much wanted to glorify at the very last point of Bhishma's leaving his world. He wanted to glorify Bhishma. As, Bhishma was a very, very great devotee of the Lord. So many people had actually, tried to console Yudhisthira. This verse, which we just read, verse 48, he's saying, I am both sinful, I have killed so many people. This Yudhisthira actually said that in front of, the Pandavas and Krishna and Vyasadeva and so many different sages and so many different persons who were all trying to convince him otherwise that, he was not at fault. But no one could convince him. Not Krishna, not Srila Vyasadeva, none of the sages, not the Pandavas, no one could convince him. Because Krishna, as a super soul within the heart of Yudhisthira, actually wasn't allowing him. He was placing him in a certain type of bewilderment. Because he wanted Bhishma to speak transcendental knowledge. He wanted to give Bhishma the opportunity to speak, because Krishna considered that Bhishma was far greater in knowledge practically than all the great sages who had tried to convince Yudhisthira. Krishna even wanted to present Bhishma as even greater than himself. Krishna wanted that. He didn't want Bhishma to leave this world dissatisfied. He wanted Bhishma to leave this world very happy and completely satisfied. That's actually how Krishna deals with his devotees, that he doesn't like to see them if they're in some dissatisfied situation. Krishna wants to rectify that situation. So he wanted all the Pandavas to go there and for Bhishma to see, here is Yudhisthira, he's been, presented as the emperor of the whole world, ruling the kingdom by his brothers. He knew that Bhishma would actually be very happy to see this. So he wanted for Bhishma's last thoughts that yes, everything has worked out nicely, everything has worked out very, very well. So in this way, Krishna was meditating upon his devotee Bhishma, and in this way, that's why, to one degree or another, Krishna was placing Yudhisthira in a sort of bewilderment that no one else could, take away from the heart of Yudhisthira. So then Yudhisthira, as it describes in the next verse, which Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was grieved like a common materialistic man. A sage is thus deluded by affection, he began to speak. So he is describing Yudhisthira's state of mind. He was bewildered. You know, he was thinking in terms of worldly affection, very similar to Arjuna. You know, at the beginning of the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was in a similar position, that he was thinking of all his friends and relatives on the bodily platform. And actually Yudhisthira was placed in a similar position. Arjuna was placed in that position so Krishna could speak, Bhagavad Gita. And Yudhisthira was placed in this position so that Bhishma could even speak further transcendental knowledge from where Krishna left off. In this way, Krishna wanted him to present transcendental knowledge even far beyond what Krishna is famous for, in one sense. So, Yudhisthira is described in that state of bewilderment in verse 48. It says, I am the most sinful man, my heart which is full of ignorance, this body which is ultimately meant for others has killed many, many phalanxes of men. Srila Prabhupada mentions that if we compare this sort of situation to Arjuna's situation in the Bhagavad Gita, Yudhisthira should be thinking like this. Srila Prabhupada explains how Yudhisthira should be thinking, this body belongs to Krishna. Krishna wants this body to fight for his satisfaction. Therefore, I should fight. That's how Yudhisthira should be thinking. And that would be the end of it. Actually, Arjuna came to that consciousness. Arjuna thought like that. In the beginning, he was bewildered, but then he thought, no, this body belongs to Krishna. Putting aside all my personal considerations of what is pleasing to myself, or what is good or what is bad, if Krishna wants it, that is the end of it. And therefore Prabhupada says, therefore Arjuna, in that sense, is considered a higher grade devotee than Yudhisthira. Because, Arjuna had come to that consciousness and, Yudhisthira had not yet come to that consciousness. Yudhisthira was putting some personal considerations. He had that tendency, Krishna noted that tendency, just like during the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna asked Yudhisthira that you go to Dronacharya and in order to get some leverage in this battle, we want to dishearten Dronacharya. You tell him that Aswatthama is dead. You tell him his son is dead, Aswatthama. He will lose heart, and then we will gain victory. And Yudhisthira was thinking, well, I cannot tell a lie. That is sinful. And so he hesitated to act on Krishna's behalf. It was actually, sometimes, actually I was speaking to one Hindu gentleman. Generally, many of the Hindus think that, it was because Yudhisthira acted falsely that therefore he had to visit hell or see hell for a day, but actually it was because he didn't obey Krishna's order that he actually had to see the hellish situation for some time. So there's also a similar story with when Krishna wanted to show Narada Muni and the residents of Dwarka the nature of the Brajavasis, and Krishna said, I have a headache and I need the dust from the lotus feet of my devotees, and that will cure my headache, that Krishna was feigning a headache. And Narada Muni was sent to the various residents of Dwarka, and we cannot give the dust of our feet to Krishna because that will be sinful, you know, to put the dust of our feet on the Supreme Lord. That will be very sinful. So, you know, they were fearful that if they did that, they would go to hell. They would, they would suffer. And so none of them would actually offer the dust of their feet to Krishna. And Narada Muni went back and reported to Krishna, and he said, "You go and ask the Brajavasis, the gopis." And he went there, and they said, "Oh, the dust of our feet will cure his headache." Immediately take. Yeah. And Narada Muni was very surprised. He said, "Aren't you fearful of going to hell?" "Yes, let us go to hell, but Krishna shall not suffer." Okay. So, that's how Yudhisthira should have been thinking. Actually, Arjuna, by hearing the Bhagavad Gita, he came to that consciousness. This is a sort of bewilderment, in fact, that Yudhisthira is in one sense. So there was actually quite a wonderful conversation between Yudhisthira, after some of these verses were spoken, Yudhisthira and various sages again, Narada, Vyasa, Pandavas, like this, trying to again get Yudhisthira to come to understand that he's not at fault and that he should rule the kingdom, because Yudhisthira refused to rule the kingdom even though he had been coronated as the emperor of the world. He actually refused to take up the kingdom because he thought that as a sinful person, selfish person, that it would be wrong for him to do that, and his heart just wasn't in it. So in one sense, there's a certain bewilderment for Yudhisthira Maharaj. In another sense, we can also take a very valuable lesson, how carefully a devotee of the Lord considers their actions. Sometimes we see that even devotees can, quickly skim through the philosophy until they latch on to a particular statement which satisfies, a particular personal consideration that they would like to follow, which, which may not have anything to do with, Krishna consciousness. They'll quickly find, "Oh, here is some statement." You see in Yudhisthira Maharaj's case that even great sages like Śrīla Vyāsadeva, Narada Muni, the Pandavas, and Krishna himself were presenting such wonderful aspects of Dharma, in all how it applies in all different circumstances and all its subtleties. And Yudhisthira would argue very nicely with them. "Oh no, this here saying this doesn't apply to me." He's saying that yes, you may say that there is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens, but this is not applicable to me because actually he wasn't the king at the time. At the time of the killing, he was actually Duryodhana was ruling, and Yudhisthira thought, although he certainly had his problems, but still, as far as administration, he was doing quite nicely. Administratively, in that sense, there was Amnesty International might have a few bones to pick with him, but as far as administration was concerned, just like Australia, you know, there's some administration seems to be going on nicely, but Amnesty International is very concerned, you know, the way that they treat the Aborigine people, you know, and so they should be. So, you know, Yudhisthira considered that he was the king, so I wasn't even the king, so therefore, there may be no sin for a king who's killing in the course of maintaining his citizens, but I wasn't the king, so how can that apply to me? So Yudhisthira is very, very expert and very careful, you know, not that, oh yes, yes, you know, any excuse, okay, yes, I killed 6 million, you know, so many millions of people, give me the slightest excuse and we'll just forget about it and, you know, let's go and have breakfast. You know, he was very, very careful to, you know, until he was absolutely convinced. He wasn't going to just shrug off some, you know, something like that. So it's a very nice example that devotees actually can follow. And again, you know, Srila Prabhupada, this is one thing that we learn from Srila Prabhupada, how to, you know, just step by step, take each verse of the Bhagavatam or each verse of the Bhagavad Gita and analyze it very carefully, not to just race through, you know, and just, you know, we may be just looking for a few things that will satisfy our mind and, you know, give us some justification for whatever we want to do as a devotee or what have you. You know, Prabhupada wanted us to take each verse, look at it very, very carefully and just make sure the proper understanding is there, then proceed to the next verse, like that, step by step, because there's no use racing through if the wrong mentality is there. Actually, when in the morning walks, there's a very nice series of morning walks in Bombay, especially 1974, and there was a Dr. Patel who accompanied Srila Prabhupada and his disciples on practically every morning walk during that time. So, Dr. Patel was a bit of a Sanskrit scholar, very, very expert in Sanskrit, and had, but he associated and also, apart from reading, you know, Bhagavad Gita and this and that and the other, he also read the philosophies of different Mayavad gurus. And in fact, 90% you know, his so-called Krishna consciousness was actually based upon Mayavad philosophy. But he felt that he was a great devotee of Krishna, just like Prabhupada, and that he was actually better than, in one sense, than Prabhupada's Western disciples, because he was, you know, a Hindu Sanskrit scholar. And so, you know, one of the first statements he made to Srila Prabhupada was that, you know, oh, you know, have you read such and such, some, you know, works about Krishna? And Prabhupada, yes, yes, yes. He said, yes, I read that, and I read it in Sanskrit. He said, you know, it was only when I read it in Sanskrit that I really got the, you know, was able to relish it like that. So Srila Prabhupada immediately picked up, well, you know, what you're saying, therefore, is that my disciples can't relish Krishna consciousness because they're not Sanskrit scholars like you. That's because they're reading my books in English, and perhaps, you know, just reading the Bhagavad Gita and and not these other elevated things, that perhaps they're far less than your far greater devotee. Now, Srila Prabhupada was very, he challenged that, but didn't really go on with it. Srila Prabhupada was, again, such a wonderful preacher, because if you actually look at the morning walks, over the series of you know, a few weeks or a month. Srila Prabhupada preached to him step by step over the course of that whole period. He didn't think, you know, I'll smash everything this morning. He knew he's going to follow me for the next, you know, month, day by day, and gradually will undo this nonsense, you know. And, you know, which is, in the case of persons who are very fixed in Mayavada philosophy and fixed in, you know, family traditions and culture, you know, over many, many generations. You know, Srila Prabhupada understood you're not going to just in one morning walk, just in 2 minutes, just undo all of that. It has to be gradually dismantled over a period of time. So, what would happen is that gradually they started reading the Bhagavad Gita, and Dr. Patel would, you know, recite the Sanskrit. Srinam Madhara Bandhanam Doha Yosa Vihotita Kalamavi Grahme Naham Kalpo Vihotam. Like this. And Srila Prabhupada would go to make a comment. Ah, the degree of ages. And then he would read the next verse. Yada, like this. And here we go, like this. And Prabhupada would try and make a statement. And again, he would read the next verse, like this. So, he was racing through. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada stopped him. And he said, you know, you try to understand one word, you know, properly. You know, before you racing through, you know, the Gita, you know, there was no benefit in racing through like this. You know, just try and understand one thing properly, you know, and then move on to the next thing. Dr. Patel, to some degree he did that, but actually he kept doing the same thing. And whatever Srila Prabhupada would say, he would challenge. He would, you know, talk over the top of Srila Prabhupada and argue with it like this. You see, you know, in the conversation, Srila Prabhupada would say something and he would just be talking right over the top of him. Oh, you know, like this, you know, presenting usually some Mayavadi philosophy. So, gradually, what Srila Prabhupada did was, every time he quoted a verse, he lit Prabhupada, you know, knowing that perhaps we'd get one sentence in, one or two sentences. He made a statement which proved, so as you go through each verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada would say, he would give an example that shows that God is a person, just within, you know, one or two sentences like that. So he would, you know, just very expertly. And there was this specific point about Dharija Narayan, which is the Mayavada philosophy that, you know, basically, you know, makes Krishna to be somewhat impersonal, because the Mayavadis, they worship Krishna. You know, they study Bhagavad Gita and they study Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, they study all these different things. Actually, they don't accept that Krishna is a person. And, you know, one of the, you know, phrases which is particularly sums up their philosophy is Dharija Narayan, that we serve God through, you know, God is everything. So, you know, God, through the poor people, you serve them, you're serving God. And of course, it's completely bogus because, you know, in one sense, as Srila Prabhupada points out, the hypocrisy that, you know, if God is the poor person, then he's everything, so he's also the goat or the cow. So he says, you kill the goat Narayan and you serve the Dharija Narayan, like this. So, you know, where's, you know, the philosophy is contradictory. You kill the goat to eat it. So we kill Narayan in the form of goat, but we serve the, you know. So if God is everything, then why are you not actually applying it like this? So it's a very hypocritical philosophy. Apart from that, of course, you know, the Supreme Lord is the husband of the goddess of fortune, Madhava. You know, how is it possible that the husband of the goddess of fortune can actually become a poor man? But, so, you know, but the Mayavadis, their conception is that, you know, God is everything, and therefore, because he's within everything, in one sense, he doesn't have a specific personality. Or, you know, how can God be just one person? Because God is everything and everyone. So how can he be one person? God can't be one person because he's everyone, he's everything. They don't understand, you know, Om Pranam Bada Pranam Yidam. You know, that the Supreme Lord is complete, that even though so many complete emanations come from the Supreme Lord, you know, he remains the complete whole. This. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada would, with each verse, he was able to just say one or two sentences and show how each and every verse was showing that God is a person. Like this. But, you know, throughout the whole time, this, you know, person was just, you know, trying to race through the Bhagavatam, through the Bhagavad Gita. And the whole time he was racing through, in one sense, you know, there was some, you know, there was a display of scholarship, being able to recite all the slokas and making his own comments even over the top of Srila Prabhupada. It appeared to be very wonderful. The fact was that if he understood any one of those verses, he should be able to see that God is a person. You know, which Srila Prabhupada was showing him. That, you know, if you actually stop and properly understand any one of these verses, I'll show you that God is a person. Okay. So, you know, Yudhisthira is proceeding something like this. You know, that is the nature of the devotee. What Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do, to proceed very, very carefully in Krishna consciousness, and not to bandy around different phrases that we may, you know, hear that, you know, so-and-so says about this. Just like, you know, in when I was a young devotee last week, there was you would hear quite often, you know, someone would have a baby, and someone would say, "Oh, that means the husband was more lusty," or, you know, because they had a boy, or whatever, or, you know, they had a girl, or something like this. Oh, the wife was more lusty, like this. So, and then, you know, so then every time someone had a child, you know, devotees say, "Look, oh, that person's lusty," like this. So, you know, the statement sort of got, you know, construed in a different way in which it was originally intended. It's actually in the third canto, in the 23rd verse. And there are also some, you know, statements where Prabhupada comments upon that in his letters. But, you know, the meaning is not that every time someone has a baby, we look at, oh, who is more lusty? You know, the husband's really lusty. You know, no, I don't know, the wife was really lusty. Like that. You know, you know, it's an Ayurvedic principle as to, you know, the production of semen and, you know, how attractive the wife is to the husband, how attractive the husband is to the wife, you know, that you know, a girl or a boy will be produced. In this case, of course, the example in the Bhagavatam is between Kadama Muni, who's actually the father of Lord Kapila, who's a pure devotee of the Lord, and Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila. So for anyone to be pointing the finger at either of them, or who's more lusty, Devahuti or Kadama Muni, you know, like that, means that they've completely, you know, misunderstood the context in which the statement is made. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada didn't want that sort of loose application of our philosophy. You know, he wanted devotees to look at each and every verse very, very carefully, step by step, and you know, try to gradually discuss it amongst devotees and question, and gradually come to a proper understanding of Krishna consciousness. Because you know, if you actually look at any one verse of the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, if you understand any one verse in its proper context, you can actually go back to Godhead. You can become fully Krishna conscious. You can become completely perfect at that. Yudhisthira, again, we can learn, although there is some bewilderment on one level, but on another level, his actions reflect the cautiousness of, that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to follow in understanding the philosophy. Understanding the philosophy so that, yes, we understand, yes, I should do this or I should not do that, because by very careful consideration of the philosophy, I've understood like that. So, actually, in this conversation, Narada Muni, he says to Yudhisthira, so just to give you a sample of how Yudhisthira dealt with so many different sages, Narada Muni says to Yudhisthira that, actually you've been rightly enthroned as emperor. You fought like a Kshatriya. You're one of the few people that actually lived. Practically everyone else died. You're the ruler of the rightful ruler of the entire world. You should rejoice. You should rejoice, and you should give joy to your friends and followers. Rule with virtue. Yudhisthira would say, well, how can I rejoice? Because in my mind I can just hear the, mourning of millions of widows. Yes, there's glory that so many great warriors have gone to the heavenly planets because they've given their lives in a great battle according to religious principles. But what about the millions of widows and the orphan children? Who are now somewhat unprotected, who are, will mourn for a long time to come. How can I possibly rejoice when, that's, sadness, that sorrow is there in my heart? And he was thinking, I've killed, as it describes here in verse 49, I've killed many boys, brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, brothers. So he was thinking about Subhadra's son and Draupadi's sons, so many different personalities. So, these were persons who were very, very much intimately related with him as well. So therefore, Yudhisthira, who was, very much, he was a little bit more like a Brahmin actually than a Kshatriya. He was a Kshatriya, but he wasn't far off being Brahminical in his mentality. And so he was very much condemning the life of the Kshatriya. And so he wanted to spend the rest of his life performing penance in the forest. He said, let Bhima be king, or let Arjuna be king, but I'm going to the forest to perform penance. So where did we hear that before? Who else wanted to? What's that? Arjuna, So, he was saying, how can I enjoy, which is again similar to Arjuna, how can I enjoy the kingdom? He was saying that at the beginning, Yudhisthira was saying it at the end. So Arjuna, stepped in and said, the duty of the Kshatriya is, glorious. Because the world actually needs a leader, a good leader, and you're the best person to do it. That's a glorious position. It is a glorious activity. There's nothing bad about that. But you know, Yudhisthira is fixed. Now this whole world is illusion, and you know, I'm going to fix my mind and going back to the spiritual abode like this. So you know, he was Yudhisthira was in essence saying that all the Kshatriya duties and everything like this, the Varnashram and everything, it's all based on the bodily illusion, and therefore it's all illusion. I'm just going to give up this whole illusory concept like that. In one sense, he's correct, but in another sense, it's not correct, because when those Varnashram duties are actually properly connected in service to the Supreme Lord, they're not mundane, they're not illusion. You know, this is the teaching in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, Krishna was saying, you fight for me, Arjuna. You know, you rise above the modes of material nature, you know, and yes, you use your Kshatriya duty, but not in a mundane way, you do it for me, and that is, you know, you come to the transcendental position. You know, Bhima, who was a little bit angry at Yudhisthira, he was saying, yes, that actually the you know, ultimately the king's duties are ordained by the Supreme Lord, and you should, you know, execute your duty in that mood, that directly serving the Supreme Lord. You know, if you're too old, or you know, or if you're defeated, yes, it's proper for a king, you know, a Kshatriya to renounce. When they become so old that they can't rule, they can't fight, that yes, you can renounce like that, but you're not in a position. Bhima said, you know, if renunciation of your duties, you know, makes you perfect, then practically all the animals and the trees would actually be perfected beings, because they're not doing their duty also. So, you know, you only renounce when you cannot do them, but actually those duties should be performed in relationship to the Supreme Lord. And then the caller spoke that actually kings renounce, you know, not by leaving their duty, but they renounce their wealth by using it in sacrifices for the Lord and distributing it to the Brahmanas. You know, so generally the kings, when they rule, the Kshatriyas, they consider whatever property they have to be the property of the Brahmanas. In that way, they perform their duty, but they do renounce. That's how they renounce. But they shouldn't renounce just by giving up their duty. Because as Sahadeva pointed out, if you give up your duty, then whatever goes wrong in the kingdom, if there's not a good leader, whatever crimes are being committed, whatever sinful activities are there because there's no good leader, that will actually be the king's fault, and he will actually have to suffer some sinful, you know, reaction. So, Bhima, you know, was also, Draupadi tried to console Yudhisthira, and Bhima was also getting more and more angry at Yudhisthira. He said, how strange it is that, you know, you won this great battle, this great war, but now you're facing another greater battle. The greatest battle that you'll ever fight is a battle with your own mind. So, and he said, actually, if you leave your body before winning this battle with the mind, you will have to take birth again and again and again and come back to the same battle with the mind until you actually become victorious. So, you know, if you simply allow your mind to defeat you and walk away, you'll take birth again, and you'll have to come back to that same point with the same mind and fight that same battle. And if you don't, you know, become victorious over your mind in the next life, you'll have to take birth again. So there's no walking away from this one. So actually, now Yudhisthira becomes a little angry, as you who have the uncontrolled mind, you know, you're the one who wants this kingdom. You know, actually, people who you know are not interested in material things, you know, the truly renounced. So there was, you know, a little bit of anger and disturbance even amongst the brothers. So actually, Arjuna then told a story about King Janaka. King Janaka actually was in a similar position to Yudhisthira, that he also wanted to renounce his kingdom and to, you know, abandon his duties, and his wife chastised him. She said, actually, you're so detached, it wouldn't matter if you were a king or a mendicant. If you're actually detached from your activities, it doesn't matter whether you're a king or a mendicant. They're both performing activities and they're both supposed to be detached. But actually, because you're wanting to be a mendicant, in one sense it's showing that you're attached to a particular type of activities. And she said, therefore, if you become a mendicant, that attachment will then be transferred to your danda and your water pot and things like that. But it'll be the same attachment. So actually, being chastised by his wise words of his wife, he actually gave up that idea. Anyway, you know, many of the great sages were sitting and they were listening to this wonderful conversation. They were very, very fascinated by, you know, this churning of the ocean of, you know, knowledge, dharma. And Krishna was, you know, enjoying immensely. Just like, you know, sometimes a game of chess, you know, you see the great battle of minds like this. Because you know, in this day and age, we don't generally see this. You know, people want more physical, you know, competition, and you know, or just you know, the Game Boys and you know, the Xbox and things like that. You know, they want some, you know, more mindless competition. You know, but here is, you know, something, a relic from the past, where this great debate, you know, of the greatest minds practically in the universe, you know, discussing, you know, dharma, religion. And Krishna was enjoying it, all the great sages, all the great rishis were enjoying it. Actually, one rishi, David Stein, he said, don't think that the life of an ascetic is devoid of action and hard work. He says, actually, the ascetics in the forest, they have to work very, very hard to, you know, for the yajnas, to make the yajnas, to worship the deities. And it's not as if, don't think that you're going to renounce action and renounce hard work and difficulty by becoming an ascetic. It is the same thing. You know, I can vouch for that. You know, as a practicing Brahman, it's you know, the amount of work that you have to do for yajnas and deity worship. And, you know, it's a lot of work, a lot of hard work. You know, a lot of hard work. You know, actually, Srila Vyasadeva, Vyas. Actually, there was one more point that this David Stein said. He said that, therefore, the life of a kshatriya, you know, the action that they perform and the austerities, is no less a religious activity. There's no less religiousness in the life of a kshatriya who's serving the Lord than in the life of a brahmana. They're both performing action, they're both performing difficult work, and they're both, you know, equal in their religiosity. There's no difference. And there is no less likelihood of a kshatriya achieving complete success and perfection than a brahmana. It's not as if you're a brahmana, you know, that you're going to have more chance of going back to the spiritual world than, you know, a sudra a Vaishya, a Kshatriya, or anyone. It's not, you have to be a Brahmana to go back to the spiritual world. Actually, you can be from any of the different four Varnas, even the Sudras. And of course, this is the point that Srila Prabhupada was making in Bombay to the Sanskrit scholar. Or you may be coming from a line of Brahmanas, and you're looking at my disciples who are coming from Malecha background, not even Sudra. Actually, he's saying they got more chance of perfection than, and Prabhupada actually quoted different verses from Shastra about, even in Chandala, if they actually properly take shelter of the Lord, they can achieve perfection and they can deliver so many others. But a Brahmana who has no real faith that God is a person cannot actually take shelter of the Supreme Lord. That person cannot even purify themselves. What to speak of others? At this. So, finally Vyasa spoke up and he said that, Yudhisthira, don't be disturbed by this happiness and distress because, they're temporary. But, happiness is there, it will be guaranteed to be followed by distress. Distress will be guaranteed to be followed by happiness. Like this. Become fixed on your service to the Lord and be free from attachment and aversion. And he said, there are only two types of persons who can be permanently happy. The complete fools. So, a complete fool, they think that they're happy even though they're suffering. They take their suffering condition as happiness. So they're happy. Ignorance is bliss. And those who have controlled their mind and senses and become, free from attachment and aversion. Those who actually conquer the mind. So those who actually become transcendental. They're also permanently happy. They're properly permanently happy. Everyone else, if they're not a complete fool, they have a little bit of knowledge, or even the neophyte transcendentalists, they all suffer. So in this way this conversation went on, and Yudhisthira Maharaj was presenting so many different counter arguments. So in the ultimate issue, Lord Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev, and therefore, although it was a very wonderful philosophical discussion, and Yudhisthira actually admitted that what you are all saying, I actually know all these things and I agree with you. So though he was presenting counter-arguments, which were also correct in one sense, he said, I actually agree with you all. I know everything you've told me, all the stories, and I actually know this, and I agree with it, but I still can't, within my heart, I can't rule the kingdom because I just feel responsible and distressed over the suffering that I have caused just so that I can be emperor. So, despite of that. And Krishna was keeping him fixed in that point as a super soul within his heart. Because he wanted to glorify Bhishma. Krishna wanted Bhishma to be glorified. And ultimately, Bhishma, who we'll see in the next chapter, he convinces Yudhisthira that, ultimately this was all the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one should surrender to this plan. As Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter, that time I am and I have come to destroy all of these people. He said to Arjuna, it's already fixed. None of these people on this battlefield are going home. They're all killed already, like this. This is within my plan. And therefore, Arjuna, you become an instrument. You fight on my behalf, you take the credit, but actually I've already done it like this. So this is the ultimate religious principle that we should try to understand. What is the plan of the Supreme Lord and surrender to that. And everything else we should give up. If something is within the plan of the Lord, when we study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, when we come to the temple to hear the devotees, if we read any of the different pastimes, we should actually be, when we study this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't be looking for something to justify any activity we want to do. What we should be doing is we should be studying in such a way as to understand what is the plan of the Lord and how can I serve, the plan of the Lord according to, what gives the Lord satisfaction. Whatever we read, whatever we hear, whatever we study, we should be doing in that light. Not that, we want to become known as a great scholar. Yes, I'm studying. Wait till people, see me give a class. Wait till people, see how much Sanskrit I know. We should study that, in this light, that I want to understand the plan of the Lord and what He wants me to do properly. Everything else I will give up and I will just do that one thing. And this is Krishna's instruction, confirmed. In the Bhagavad Gita, you just surrender unto me and you give up all other duties, all other activities. And of course, this is, what Srila Prabhupada taught, this is what we learn in ISKCON. You can actually study Hindu philosophy in many different places, but if you come to ISKCON, there's one focus, and that is how to surrender to Krishna. That's the difference. Every aspect of the philosophy. This is, and therefore you see in Srila Prabhupada's purports. Srila Prabhupada's purports are very unique because, many of the acharyas, when they explain the verses, they just make sure you understand the verse. What they're saying is this. When Srila Prabhupada presents his purports, on every page, you come away thinking, I must surrender to Krishna. It's very, that point is just very prominent. So his purports are quite unique to any other acharya. And not only I must surrender, but Srila Prabhupada shows us how, that particular aspect of philosophy can be applied to us here in any part of the world, in Kali Yuga, in any position, how easily we can take that and surrender to Krishna. It's a very, very wonderful purports by Srila Prabhupada. In this way, we study the philosophy. The secret to understanding this philosophy is that we must approach the representative of Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is showing Yudhisthira, the Pandavas, and the whole world that you will not understand this ultimate conclusion of all the Vedas, that one must surrender to the will of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, until you approach Guru. And so he is showing this through Bhishma. The Bhishma, one approaches the Guru in the form of Bhishma, and then that which is not understood, even in the discussion of many, many great sages, becomes understood when one approaches Krishna's devotees. Then Krishna, within the heart, he acts in such a way that you can understand. Therefore we see in ISKCON, people come and they do some little service for Srila Prabhupada, and Krishna gives them within the heart the understanding, I must surrender to Krishna. And people come, they serve prasadam, and sometimes they come, they eat prasadam,
And then they think, I deserve Guru Prasad. And then somehow within their heart they're thinking, I must surrender to Krishna like this. Because they're approaching Srila Prabhupada, that essence of philosophy, which, you know, even amongst the conversations of all the great sages was not actually properly formulated, even in the discussion of religious principles amongst the greatest minds in the universe, only when you approach Krishna's representative as he appoints, then Krishna becomes pleased, and then he lets everyone understand, yes, this is the ultimate instruction. You surrender to Krishna, you follow the will of the Supreme Lord. So when people come to ISKCON and they do some little service to Srila Prabhupada, that realization comes, but you cannot get that anywhere else. You know, people may quote the Bhagavad Gita, you know, forwards and backwards, fluently in Sanskrit and this, that and the other, and they can tell all the stories of the Puranas, and they know all the different traditions and intricacies of, you know, Brahminical rites and this, that and the other, but this one point cannot be understood, that the ultimate goal of all their activities is to make sure that we are trying to follow the will of the Lord. That means surrender, and to, you know, do that. And just by any tiny little service to Srila Prabhupada or his representatives, that realization comes. And that is the miracle of ISKCON. That is the one thing which distinguishes ISKCON from any other religious organization in the world. You know, just the potency by which people can come to the topmost understanding. Otherwise, it's not possible over hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes. And that is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, this is what we see in this pastime, which is demonstrated also through Vishwanath. I'm just going to leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments? Yeah, just to you know, just to go through slowly and progressively, you know, just following Srila Prabhupada's process, just like we take one verse, you know, one or two verses each day and of the Bhagavatam, or, you know, if we're reading, you know, if we're having a discussion, like devotees always having home programs and discussions, you know, in those discussions they just take, you know, one little aspect of the philosophy, a verse, and they just discuss it amongst themselves very carefully, and, you know, like that. Not that when we have our discussions we've got to, you know, do, you know, race through the material, but, you know, just following Srila Prabhupada's step-by-step process. And if we do that, the understanding will come. Just slow and steady. That's what Srila Prabhupada said to that Dr. Patel. You know, slow and steady wins the race. That's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. You know, just over the course of a lifetime, you know, it's not a race in one sense. It's better to take this lifetime and, you know, over the course of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever we have in this world, to understand things properly, than to race through the philosophy in a few months and then, you know, go back to the material world, which is, you know, sometimes happens. So you're just following Srila Prabhupada's method. Yeah.
They were not devoted or confused with any of this. They were comfortable with the idea.
tensions in the Bhagavad Gita among the Pandavas, I imagine. Is that one verse? And I think also in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you know, it describes that among the Pandavas, Arjuna, you know, is considered superior. as far as you're saying, you know, so Nakula, Sahadev, you know, Draupadi, and Bhima, you know, in one sense they were following Yudhisthira and Arjuna, you know. So therefore, you know, their understanding was coming through following Arjuna. Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and everyone followed. Even we see here that Yudhisthira may have been a little reluctant, still in one sense he was spurred on by Arjuna. You know, his intimate relationship and understanding of Krishna as well. If we follow the devotees who are surrendered to the will of Krishna, then we get the proper understanding. Really it's when, you know, Bhishma Dev speaks that, you know, the ultimate conclusion is made more clear to everyone concerned. So the more we follow the devotees who are intimately, those devotees who are intimately related to Krishna in full surrender, then, you know, the proper understanding is there. Therefore, you know, one verse in the scriptures is that for one who has implicit faith in the Supreme Lord and the Guru, that all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically manifest within their hearts. So this was the point that Srila Prabhupada was making in Bombay, that you know, this Indian gentleman, you know, he was, because he understood religious principles and Sanskrit and so many scriptures, it would appear that he was in a higher position. But because he wasn't following Srila Prabhupada, actually, he was arguing with him, challenging him. The imports of the Vedas did not manifest in his heart, whereas Srila Prabhupada's disciples, who had no background of knowledge in anything, even materially, many of them, because they were simply following, you know, they had implicit faith. Prabhupada says, is it? That's all. Should Prabhupada say something, they just accept, yes. They will question, you know, they didn't understand, let us understand, but they had implicit faith that if Prabhupada is saying this, yes, we accept. And Prabhupada says Krishna is God, so we have implicit faith in Krishna. So they had implicit faith in Krishna, they had implicit faith in Guru, and therefore all the imports, therefore you'll see that those who follow Srila Prabhupada now, you know, their, you know, all the knowledge of the Vedas has expanded in their heart. You know, you see the great devotees within ISKCON, you know, writing so many wonderful books, you know, you see Banu Swami in so many wonderful books, and Jivaram Swami, you know, why? For one reason is that they had implicit faith in Prabhupada and Guru. And therefore, you know, in one sense in the beginning they may have followed a little blindly, but, you know, Krishna revealed all the inputs of Vedic knowledge gradually to those who have that faith. So, you know, in that sense, those who followed Arjuna and Bhishma, you know, then that knowledge, you know, becomes manifest to that degree. Any other questions?
Mine is a bit of a technical question.
No.
The background of your class is the text that we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Is what we've heard the result of you combining this broad reading of the Bhagavatam?
These actual verses in the Bhagavatam are verses from Mahabharata. And it's a little difficult to find them because the chronology, we're reading this after the prayers of Queen Kunti. So if you go to the Mahabharata and you go to the place after the prayers of Queen Kunti, you'll see that Krishna actually leaves Dwarka. He doesn't then go to see Bhishma. So this conversation took place many months earlier. So it's a little difficult to find the Mahabharata, but these verses are verses from the Mahabharata, practically word for word. And you'll see that in the Bhagavatam, such as the ninth canto, where it describes the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. You know, in essence, you're just getting a summary of exactly what's in the Ramayana. So, but the main points. Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami, in the ninth canto, he gives the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra, but the exact main points that you really need to know, the essence, the absolute essence, the cream of it, that is the Bhagavatam, it is the cream of Vedic literature. It takes the essence, the cream of it, puts it in. So the essence of the cream of that whole conversation with Yudhishthira Maharaj and, you know, is there in these verses. But if you want to fluff it out a little bit, like, then you can read the Mahabharata, and there it shows all the conversations in between each of these verses and the events that happen. Any other questions? Thank you. Hare Krishna.